Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Welcome to Soho Strangler Week by Murdmile. To accompany the series, here's a few extra details from the police files and the court records to aid your enjoyment and maybe even help you crack the case. This episode is about the reliability of eyewitness testimony. Now, what I'm going to do with this one, I'm just going to focus on the murder of French Marie. As you can remember, with French Fifi, Marie Cotton, there were no one cited in and around where the murder took place, so we don't actually have anyone that we can say, yes, this is definitely the killer. With Dutch Lair, we kind of have a sighting of someone who could potentially be the killer. The person who was last seen going into 66 Old Compton Street with Dutch Lair, but we can't confirm whether that was the killer. Whereas with French Marie, we've got a unique situation here in that it was in broad daylight. There were multiple people. Not only did people, unlike with Dutch Lair, where some people got a fleeting glimpse, here people actually stood opposite the killer. Some of them even spoke to him in broad daylight in normal environment. So this is almost perfect. And even better, we even know what the killer looks like. We even know what the suspect looks like. So it's perfect. We can kind of make a good comparison here. So I'm just going to focus on French Marie. Now, with eyewitness testimony, it's always going to be problematic. The police state that eyewitness testimony is only ever about 30% accurate. Your eyes are pretty good. It's just how your memory translates things and what your memory chooses to remember. Because it doesn't remember everything. It only remembers the pieces it wants to remember. And the rest, it tends to make up, unfortunately. So eyewitness testimony is not good. And we'll prove that with the next section. Also, the problem with the eyewitness testimony, especially in this case as well, is that think about this situation. You've got French Marie walking down a street where she is known. She's known to be a sex worker. She's walking her patch hand in hand with a client who she clearly likes. There's no shouting. There's no screaming. So why would anyone remember that? Why would anyone remember French Marie and the man it would turn out to be, Norman Stevenson? Why would people in a market remember two people walking through a market holding hands? There's nothing. If something violent happened, they would remember it. One of the problems with the eyewitnesses as well is that obviously if a situation happens in a place, the police turn up there and then they can turn around, they can grab the eyewitnesses and go, okay, we need a statement. Unfortunately, many had to be interviewed the next day. Some, having been tracked down, were interviewed a couple of days later. So your memory of what happened can change. Don't forget, people would have read details in the papers, which can also affect what you remember, because you read the papers, you believe that what's in the papers is true. Therefore, you start discounting what's in your own memory. You start discounting your own belief. It's also, this is only something I discovered recently, it's also a biological fact that you don't remember what happened. What you remember is the memory of remembering. So it's kind of like, as you say, like Chinese whispers. I believe in America you call it telephone. It's like you say something to someone and then you pass it on to the next person and the next person. It gets diluted as it goes down. And it's the same with memory as well. When you remember something, you're remembering the last time you remembered it. And because you're in a different location from when you originally saw something, therefore different pieces get added, different pieces get edited out. Unfortunately, it's the way the brain works. You just can't help that. So, So let's dive in to the French Marie's murder. So, as we know, Norman Stevenson, 24 years old, 5 foot three, kind of thin to medium build, roundish face, relatively pasty, with a ruddy complexion, blue eyes, dark kind of brown brushed back hair, some said it was greased back, wearing a dark brownish suit, slightly scruffy, and wearing no hat. Now, let's dive into what people saw. Now, let's not forget, they saw a man, multiple people saw the same man in broad daylight in a public space. So this is the perfect place to be able to see someone and to get a really good overview, even in the pub as well. Even though it was inside and it wasn't outside in the daylight, even inside the pub, the people were just a few feet away. They were talking to each other. There was nothing in the way. There was no distraction. Some of the witnesses even had a nice long conversation with Norman Stevenson. So you would expect their description of the man that they would be asked the next day, maybe the day after that, what their recollection was. But let's not forget, they're in the pub. They've had a couple of bevvies. Might be a little bit confused. So, Mrs. Gertrude Calthorpe. Now, she was one of the ladies who was in the pub with French Marie. They were chatting, and she said the man was about 28 years old, very short, thin build. Face was roundish and somewhat pasty. He had no hat, and she thought he was wearing a brown suit. So not terrible at all. Frederick Thomas Dobson, who was the man who had a conversation with him about, because they were ex-miners, and he was the one who said he's got a Newcastle accent. He described him as 35 to 36, so he's 12 years out. 5 foot four, not too bad, medium build, full face, sallow complexion. Looks like he works indoors, i.e. pasty. Fair hair, so not dark hair, fair hair, parted at the side, slightly curly. Clean shaven, thick jaw, just dressed in a brown suit with a distinctive stripe, soft collar, tie and waistcoat. Now see, that's interesting, isn't it? He can describe the dark brown suit with a distinctive stripe on the soft collar, the tie and the waistcoat, but he can't remember the hair. He said the hair was fair, whereas actually it was kind of dark. And he said he spoke with a Newcastle accent, so he was able to pin down the area of the country pretty well. Thank God Newcastle has quite a distinctive accent. If anyone is not from the UK, type in Newcastle accent. You'll get a sense of what it is. I'm not going to do an insulting version of it here, but it's one of the few accents, I would say, in the United Kingdom where you can't refuse it. You can't confuse it with anything else. It's the same as Brummie. Do you know, as a Brummie myself, I can say that. But you can't confuse it with other stuff. George Daniel Bakewell, who was the match seller, who was also the other guy who spent about 20 minutes with Norman Stevenson, said he was 24 to 30, 5 foot 4, medium build, clean shaven, dark tweed suit, no hat, dark brushed back hair, which was greased. He thinks the man had a scar on the side of his face and also spoke with a Newcastle accent. So not terrible. Phyllis Kingham, who was known as Merle, said he was 5 foot four. He didn't wear a cap. He had straight hair, wasn't bad looking, had a plump face, was aged 28 to 30 and didn't wear a hat. So the ages are changing. But then again, you think about it. It's hard to pin down someone's age, isn't it? It's hard to pin... The only reason you can pin down someone's height is if you're standing next to them and you know that you're 5'6", and if they're 5'4", and they're a little bit shorter, you know, you just, you go, well, they're about a couple of inches shorter than me. But when you look at something like with Dutch Leia, where Emilio Plantino and Nellie Few saw the man walking with Dutch Leia walking along the street, and that would have been a fleeting glimpse at midnight. It was dark. The lighting wasn't particularly good. So what they're basing it on is the height of Dutch Leia. And they know that Dutch Leia was about 5 foot tall. But the problem is, Dutch Leia, because she was quite short, she often wore high heels. And we don't know what shoes she was wearing that night. So that makes it difficult. So they may have said he was 5'5" to 5'7", I think was the description they gave. But that's all dependent on whether she was wearing heels or not. Because if she was wearing, if she wasn't wearing heels, then he would look taller than he actually was. If she was wearing heels, she would look more kind of the same height as him. If he was 5'3", she would be about 5'3", 5'4" as well. So it kind of throws everything off. Also, you've got depth perception as well. That throws everything off. Thomas Leith, who was a fishmonger, said that he was aged about 30, was shorter than Elsie. Everyone calls her Elsie. This is French Marie. She was 5'3". So he's actually saying that he was about 5'2", and wearing a dark suit. Here's one for you. This is kind of interesting to do with ages. Henry Boone, who was the newspaper boy, so he was only about 15 years old. He said that Norman Stevenson was aged about 40. But when you think about it, when you're 16 years old and you see someone who's aged about 25, they look a lot older than you would think. It's like I'm 47 now, and oh dear, dread to think about it. And whenever I look at people who are the same age as me, I always think, God, they look really old. I hope I don't look that old. But I'm sure other people look at me and think the same. Do you know? And when you're, it's like when you're at school, and say you're in secondary school, so that's ages 11 to 16. And when you join secondary school, you look up at the kids who are in the final year. They're age 16 years old, and they're huge, they're tall, they've all got like a bum fluff, and you think, oh, they're all so grown up. And then when you get to 16, you just go, no, they're not really, are they? It's all about perspective. So with Henry Boone, he said the person was about 40. So that's 16 years out. He said he was 5'4", spoke with a foreign accent. I'm sorry to anyone out there who is a Geordie, but Henry Boone described a Newcastle accent as a foreign accent. But then again, let's not forget, this is a young boy who's almost certainly lived in London all of his life. Do you know, he knows the London accent, so when he hears something like that, it doesn't make sense to him. He can't equate it. Unlike someone like Frederick, who was the miner, he's worked all around the country, so he's picked up accents before. He knows he can hear a Geordie accent and go, "Oh, that guy's from Newcastle." Whereas Henry Boone just goes, "I don't recognise this voice at all. It's entirely foreign." Henry would also say he had fair hair, pale face, a light suit, and no hat. See, all the details are off. Reuben Packroft. Interestingly, Reuben was one of the... there was only two people. It was Reuben Packroft, the bookseller, and Sadie Gibber, the fruiter's assistant, who both worked on the stalls. They were the two who, in the ID parade, we'll get to that shortly, was able to say, that's categorically him. But look at their details here. Reuben Packroft said... Now, as a backtrack, Reuben used to sell true crime detective magazines to French Marie on a regular basis. So he knew her really well. He knew exactly what she liked. He'd seen her with Norman Stevenson, he said, at least twice, maybe three times prior. But he described him as 35 to 40 years, 5'4", dark brown hair, brushed straight back, that's right, ruddy complexion, yes, average build, yes, dark suit and no hat, clothes a little shabby, appearance of a broke down clerk. See, not terrible, he got the age entirely off. Miss Sadie Gibber, the fruiter's assistant, said he was about 30, same height as the woman, that's about right, proportionately built for the height. Yep. Hair greased back and brushed back, no hat, clean shaven, sallow complexion, pale. He looked like a low type of person. God, I hope no one describes me as that. A dark grey suit, very dirty. She had never seen her with this man before, which is interesting because Reuben had. But then again, people have different memories. It's like I just went into the coffee shop around the corner and they went, oh, hello, Michael. He said, what would you like, Michael? Do you want a decaf soya latte or do you want a soya hot chocolate? It's like I don't even need to ask the question anymore. They know me now, so they know what I like. Creature of habit. Henry Radley, the fishmonger, said that Norman was aged around 40, was a little shorter than the woman, which is odd because they're about the same height. Although, let's not forget, she may have been wearing heels. Kathleen Uhler, who was a friend, said he was aged 25 to 30, 5'6", about the lady's height, which is interesting because she's 5'3". But she's saying they're the same height. But, you know, it's all about perspective, isn't it? It's all about what you can remember. You know, you don't walk into a pub. Like, I was in a pub like 2 nights ago. I can't remember anyone who was in there. I remember the annoying kids who were running around. I remember the sound of their annoying squealing. And the fact that one of them fell over and started crying. And, so annoying. So annoying, children. I don't remember anyone's faces. I don't remember what the person who served me looked like at all. So, and why would I? But that's interesting. Today, the police may turn up and say, oh, the person who served you in the pub 2 nights ago was murdered. Can you remember who they were? And I go, I can't remember if it was a man or a woman. I really can't. Even on here, Eva Schladova, who was the tenant who lived above Marie, said he was aged 30 to 35, 5'6", sallow complexion, mid-brown hair, blue eyes, dark suit. And her husband didn't see his face at all, so he could barely give a good reference. But that's kind of interesting, isn't it? Everything's all a mess. Now, sometimes, to go back to French Fifi, some people do make honest mistakes. So I may have mentioned this in Extra Mile, but around the time of French Fifi's murder, they were the police wanted to speak to anyone who was a taxi driver in the area, because the likelihood is that French Fifi would have been picked up by a taxi and taken back to her flat at some point. And they mentioned that she was on Archer Street. So 1:30 a.m. on Monday the 4th of November, around the time that she was murdered, a taxi driver called Charles Branch said he picked up a woman he thought came from 4 Archer Street. She did. And she asked to be driven to Hill Martin Road, just off the Caledonian Road, so just past King's Cross, where they picked up a man and both were driven back to 4 Archer Street. He said, owing to the mannerisms of the woman, it struck me at the time that something was wrong. Now, the problem is, he was absolutely right. A woman, a prostitute, did leave 3 to 4 Archer Street at that time, did go off to King's Cross, did pick up a man, did drive them back to the flat in and around the time that she was murdered. Unfortunately, that was Millie Warren, her neighbour, and she was upstairs in bed with William Charles Hill, who was her boyfriend at the time. It's interesting that line that he says, owing to the mannerisms of the woman, it struck me at the time that something was wrong. But there was nothing wrong. These two, Millie and William, were really good friends. He regularly came around to see her. She really liked him. He stayed the whole night. So it's interesting how people can kind of attribute fear to something, even though they don't see it. But after they've read about it in the papers and they go, oh, someone was murdered. And then they go, oh, yeah, I'm almost certain that they were terrified. I'm almost certain that I heard something. But, you know, she didn't. It was just a lady going back to her flat with her friend. So the details were almost right, and he wasn't lying at all. It's just your memory. We want to make connections. We want to be helpful. We want to do the best that we can for other people. And sometimes our brains take a little bit too much of a leap. Going back to French Marie. So if you remember in the episode, so French Marie was murdered August 1937. It took the police a year and a half, it was about 17, 18 months in total, to find Norman Stevenson and to finally arrest him, owing to the murder of Catherine Maud Chamberlain over in Durham. So it was a long time, and they knew this was going to be a really tall order, but what they needed to do was get all of the witnesses who had given all these statements and say, right, what is that horrible noise? So I could hear a horrible noise outside. It's really distracting me. Sorry about that. They needed to get all the witnesses together and say, right, you saw this man. We have arrested someone. Here's a lineup. Is the man in this lineup? So it was a standard ID parade. Legally, it had to consist of at least 8 people who had to be, as far as possible, resemble the suspect in age, height, general appearance, and position in life. That's the exact statement. So the police report said, it should be pointed out, however, that on the question of identification, a considerable period of time had elapsed, and the witnesses may experience some difficulty in now identifying the man, although at the time of making the statements, they gave a very good description, which, on comparison with police records, is identical to that of Norman Stevenson. So when they actually took, even though we went through all of those witness statements just a little bit ago, and they all seemed quite wildly different. When you actually piece it all together, the police did an average description, and they said they worked out he was aged 24 to 30, 5'3" to 4", thin to medium build but proportionate, round face, pasty with a ruddy complexion, blue eyes, dark brown hair brushed back, possibly greased. A dark brownish or grey suit, which was scruffy and made of different odd bits of material, and no hat, even though 2 people actually said it did look as if he was wearing a hat, but he wasn't wearing a hat, and he spoke with a Newcastle accent. Now, with the ID parade, they couldn't stand there and say, okay, each person, you need to say these specific words. Unfortunately, it's a visual identification. They couldn't say, can you say, why, hey, man? I mean that, you know, it wouldn't have worked. It wouldn't have worked at all. That was my really feeble attempt at a Geordie accent. So this was the ID parade. It happened on the 14th of March 1939, so 18 months later, at Albany Police Station, between 3:25 p.m. and finishing at 4:25 p.m. Out of the 20 witnesses... there were 13 called in total. Mrs. Eva Schladova, who was living above, she identified a man called Thomas Brown, which is interesting. She saw him on the stairs. I mean, she did eventually say that kind of on the stairs, it was quite dark on there, so the lighting wasn't particularly good, and she only saw him for a couple of seconds. So that's kind of forgivable. Kaufman Schladova identified a man called John Page, but he would say in his statement that he never saw Norman Stevenson's face. Gertrude, who was the friend who was with French Marie, she also identified a man called Thomas Brown. Now, before these people went on the ID parade, these aren't just random people that the police are going, ah, it's fine, they look about right. The police know who they are. They've got them on record. They've already assessed them in advance. They've already worked out where these people are or were on the night of the murder. So they've already been discounted. They know that they're innocent. They know that they've got nothing to do with it. But physically, they look about right. So they're perfect for an ID parade. Reuben Packroft, who actually lived on Seaton Street, it says his ID was very definite, and he picked out the prisoner before he had completed all members of the ID parade. Interesting, though, that he got the age wrong. But, you know, it's, as mentioned, it is hard to kind of pin down people's ages. Mrs. Kathleen Ula, she picked out a man called John Shelton. George Daniel Bakewell, who was one of the guys, he was the match seller who spoke to him in the pubs for 20 minutes. He couldn't identify him at all. One of the things that may have thrown them off is, I didn't put this in the episode because it was already a complicated series and I didn't want to throw too many red herrings in there. There was already enough in there. But after the murder, Norman Stevenson, when he went back up to Newcastle, he actually grew sideburns. So he got his usual messy hair, but he'd grown really, really long sideburns, which is why with the... At the end of the episode where he goes to a policeman, he said, I'm fed up. Everyone keeps having a go at me about my appearance. The thing was, everyone had, because his description in the paper was so detailed, because the press hadn't messed around with it, then been arseholes by saying he was, he had a hunchback or, you know, something to make him monstrous. They were quite accurate about it because everyone kept saying, it looks like you. You look like the man who they're describing to be the killer. That really wound him up. So it was a perfect bit of journalism that actually, in the end, ended up catching a killer. So they may not have been able to identify him here because he had a big old set of lamb chops. Mrs. Sadie Gibber. She was the market stall holder as well, worked on the fish stall. She was very definite. She stated, this is the man. James Pritchard, he couldn't identify anyone. Phyllis Kingham, who was there as well, ditto, she couldn't identify anyone. Henry Boone, the young paperboy, he couldn't identify the killer. Henry Alexander, who was in the pub as well, could not identify him. Frederick Dobson, who spent 20 minutes with the man, couldn't identify him. And Joseph Clancy, who was also in the pub and spent about half an hour with him, could not identify him either. So kind of interesting. Eva Schladova said, I attended the ID parade on the 14th of March 1939 at Albany Police Station, and I picked out a man I thought was the man I had seen enter at 306 Euston Road. It was such a long time ago now that I'm not too sure I would know the man again. I saw him on the stairs with Estelle, that's actually Marie, and the light was not very good. So, as you can see, you know, time passing by makes it really difficult for anyone, eyewitnesses, to be able to go, there's that person. But even if you take away from the equation the fact that the ID parade was 17, 18 months later, even seeing a person that you only saw the day before and then the police going, right, what did he look like? It's hard to pick. Even if you've got a perfect image in your head, you're having to equate all of these details. And if you were to, like, if someone were to look at me, it's like, what height would they say I am? They'd probably say I'm somewhere between probably 5'9 and 6'1, probably. I'm just under 6 foot. What size am I? You know, that's the horrible thing. Some people would say I'm probably average. Someone would probably say I'm really fat. Do you know, some people would say I'm bald. Others would say stubbly. Do you know, there's a fine line of descriptions. We all have a different way of describing things, and we all think that we're right. And age is a really difficult one. Height is, weight is. It's all really complicated. So, so eyewitness testimony can't be 100%. It's 30% accurate, and that's about as good as we're going to get. If you enjoyed that, there's more to come. Your regular episodes of Murder Mile will return on Thursday, the 27th of April, or a few days earlier via Patreon.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.